Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and you're listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour, where we set aside a great deal of time to take on a given single issue and do it with a sense of scholarship and in-depth, original, unbiased reporting. Today, the case of a doctor who has been excoriated, banned from practicing medicine, a reputation trashed in the United Kingdom and the United States, and specifically, repeatedly on CNN, by the British medical community, all because of the original investigations of a Brian Deer working for, on behalf of the Sunday Times of London. When I first heard of these allegations against Dr. Andrew Wakefield and others working with him, I was surprised, because having done two multi-award-winning in-depth documentaries, Vaccine Nation and Autism Made in the USA, I was familiar with a great deal of evidence that associated various compounds in vaccines and various types of vaccines and number of vaccines with adverse events that happen in babies and young children who have had these vaccines. But for almost 20 years now, the medical community, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, the CDC, the FDA, and our U.S. Public Health Service, has refused to acknowledge any association between autism spectrum disorder and vaccines at all. They have refused to accept that any ingredients, combination of ingredients, or number of vaccines in a susceptible child could cause any problems involving autism. The mainstream media, all the mainstream media, without exception, accepted this as the facts. However, after you have spoken with hundreds and hundreds of parents, including physicians and professors of medicine, as I have, whose own children were vaccinated and end up with autism spectrum disorder, who will state, my child was developing normally, without any problems, meeting all of their age markers until they had multiple vaccines, and then it changed. They regressed. The degree of the regression and the degree of the symptoms was different for each child, but all of them could be considered a part of this full spectrum of autistic conditions. So do we believe the official announcements of official medicine that there is no association, or do we do some independent investigation to see whether or not it's true or not? So I began to look in depth at the claims, and I started with two basic questions. Are vaccines safe, and are they effective? Because even the groups like Barbara Lou Fisher's groups that represents many children and parents who have been damaged by vaccines are still pro-vaccine. Dr. Andrew Wakefield, pro-vaccine. In fact, the vast majority of people who are in the field who have had as patient activists, as victim activists, they're still pro-vaccines. And I ask, had they done enough homework to determine whether or not they should still be supporting vaccination? I've spent thousands of hours in my investigations. I've even brought in experts in the field and had them review the material prior to publication to see whether or not the information was objective and fair. What I have found in a series of published articles is that vaccines cannot be determined safe or effective for a given individual, and whether it's from some of the leading immunologists who claim that vaccination with a single or multiple vaccinations cannot be proven to create protective lifelong antibodies specific to the antigen that a person's being vaccinated for, chickenpox, smallpox, measles, whatever it may be, hepatitis. It is the belief in the sanctity of vaccines as a public health program. I have published probably in the neighborhood of 16 articles in the last 3 years. All are fully referenced and all are fully footnoted, and they're all on the website progressiveradionetwork.com as well as garynall.com. They're there for you to examine and review. Therefore, when these allegations came against Andrew Wakefield and his associates, and he was not claiming that the vaccines caused autism, he was merely examining children who had autistic spectrum disorders to see if there was any association between any vaccine, specifically the MMR vaccine, and he did not have a definitive opinion, but suggested additional research, and still suggested vaccination, except that he suggested spacing the vaccines instead of having them all at once, the measles, mumps, and rubella, rather space them out. Therefore, the attack against him, I felt, was suspicious. It just raised some red flags. Hence, we have spent thousands of hours examining this case in depth to see whether or not the charges against him and the public vilification were justified. During the next 6 hours, we will uncover in what will be one of the longest uninterrupted investigative reports, including a one-hour debate between myself and his attacker, Brian Deere. You will hear the story laid out. It will be for you to decide the merits of the arguments, pro and con. During this hour, we will talk with two individuals. From England, Isabel Thomas. She has two autistic children who were part of the original 12 patients in the Royal Free Study reported in The Lancet by Drs. Wakefield, Walter Smith, Murch, and colleagues. It is this 1998 study by Dr. Wakefield, subsequently retracted by the publication, that has caused such a fury over the MMR vaccine, and which is now the basis for the witch hunt against Wakefield in the UK. She has four sons, two who received the MMR vaccine and are now with autism and serious bowel problems, and two sons who did not receive the MMR vaccine and they're completely healthy. Isabel is also the main parent Brian Deere has been most focus on. Although she belongs to various autism organizations, she is not a member of any anti-vaccine group in the UK. Then we will speak with Dr. David Lewis. Dr. Lewis is a former senior research microbiologist with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Research and Development Department and a respected expert in institutional fraud. He is the only EPA scientist to have been published in peer-reviewed journals such as The Lancet and the most respected scientific publication in the world, Nature, as well as Nature Medicine. His research into the transmission of infectious diseases and dental equipment led to the current heat sterilization technology used in dentistry worldwide. His work in DNA fingerprinting to study climate change's effects on the bacterial breakdown of pesticides earned him the EPA's highest achievement award. In his whistleblowing case, Dr. Lewis concerned the need for the EPA to abandon land application of sewage sludge on farmland. This resulted in his being fired from the agency. As many of you know, as a certified organic farmer and one who teaches organic farming, I am opposed to sludge. It is extremely toxic. It is loaded with heavy metals and different types of medication and human feces, and this can never be sterilized to the degree that it is made completely safe and applicable to farmland, irrespective of any of the industry pro-sludge people who say we should be using it. This year, Dr. Lewis issued an official report calling for a formal investigation into the practices of the British Medical Journal and, in particular, the journal's editor-in-chief, Fiona Godley, and the freelance journalist Brian Deere, regarding Dr. Andrew Wakefield's research and published papers about the measles virus and GI disorders in autistic children. And while at the National Whistleblower Center, Dr. Lewis' investigation into medical records led him to the conclusion that the British Medical Journal and Brian Deere have espoused a theory that is tabloid science at best. He is also called as an expert witness in federal and state court cases involving the examination of colonic biopsy samples. We have chosen not to have Dr. Wakefield on this segment of our program. You will hear him later, because he recently sued Brian Deer and the British Medical Journal and other individuals, and is now taking his case into the court system to exonerate his name. Let us begin. First off, I'd like to welcome you, Dr. David Lewis, and I'd like to welcome you, Isabel Thomas.
Hello, it's nice to speak to you again, Gary.
Dr. Lewis, we're going to speak with Isabella first, and then we'll come to you, all right?
I'll be here, thanks.
Thank you. Isabella, I would like for you to take a step-by-step through all that you have experienced, but let us assume that many people for the first time are listening to this program, and therefore they do not have the full construct. They don't know, where are we beginning? Who is Dr. Wakefield? What was this study? Why was this an issue? What's the big deal about finding that some of the kids who had autistic spectrum disorder also had some problems in their bowels? So take a step by step through the initial description of what you and the other parents in the United Kingdom experienced, and the impact of Dr. Wakefield as just one of the researchers in this study.
Okay. Well, as you say, I have four boys. The first two had the natural measles, so they didn't have the MMR vaccine. The second two did. And the first of my sons who did reacted very badly within hours. He was very ill. I'll try and be very brief because there's quite a bit to say about this. He started developing awful symptoms. He was in a lot of pain, bowel pain especially, and he changed neurologically overnight with all of this pain, etc. I was very concerned, and I went down to the doctors, and the doctor actually on his medical notes did put that he did have the vaccine because he was very ill, but that was it. No help, nothing. It was really bad. Waited until Terry was 21 months old and he had the vaccine because I was pushed. I mean, it was very, very hard to say no when you're told it's a coincidence and it's nothing to do with the vaccine. Even my father said doctors wouldn't do that. It's nothing to do with the vaccine. Terry had a bad reaction. And Terry was very ill. Now, one of the symptoms of both boys was the pain, unbelievable pain they had. I went to my doctor's surgery, and the minute you mentioned vaccine or anything to do with the child being affected that way, it's a blind panic for them. They don't want to know. Now, in the meantime, you go to different parent groups, etc., and there was other parents experiencing the same sort of thing, the same sort of bowel disease, and it was quite shocking, actually, to find that it was in a very close proximity of where you lived. And one of the parents was just saying, when I was mentioning the bowel especially, was causing neurological problems. And she mentioned a doctor called Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who had been looking into Crohn's disease at that time. And I was desperate because none of the doctors were listening to me. They were saying I was manipulating the medical services. They were threatening to take the children off me. So it was absolute desperation. And I phoned the Royal Free Hospital because it was in the newspaper article. And I managed to speak to Dr. Wakefield, and it was the first time that a doctor actually listened to me. And he did. He just listened to everything I had to say. And he said that he's not my doctor. He cannot advise me on what to do, etc. He said, but the Royal Free is one of the best hospitals in the UK for looking at bowel disease. I went to then and I searched for a GP who had an autistic son, and I begged him to take on my boys, and he did. And he was very worried, and he referred them locally to a local hospital. They did not examine the bowel, which was quite shocking. And I was hearing from other parents the same thing was happening. They were saying toddler diarrhea, there's nothing wrong with your children. You're talking about blood, mucus, different colors, feces, horrendous, with the children screaming in pain. So the doctor was very, very concerned about this. And he said that, I said to him, you know, we need to look at the bowel. We need to find out what's going on because I know there's something seriously happening. He agreed. And the boys were referred to Professor Walker Smith at the Royal Free Hospital. Well, Michael was first referred. When I went to the Royal Free Hospital and saw Professor Walker Smith, usually there's different studies that go on. So it's not just a study that was done with Professor Walker Smith and Professor Simon Murch and Andrew Wakefield. You'll find in any hospital that there'll be studies and they'll say to you, would you like to be part? Would you like to take some blood from your child or whatever it is, or biopsies? They're still doing it to this day, Gary, with biopsies at these hospitals. And it's a blinded study, and so your children's names won't be part of it. It won't affect the treatment of your children. And that was one of the things they said, if you say no. And I thought, well, it's important. Studies are important. And they explained it was a study looking at autistic children because they were worried that they were finding that autistic children were having bowel problems. And so I said, yes, that would be brilliant. I have the boys to be part of this study. But they were being, that was a sideline to them being looked after and investigated for the illness that they were having. And that's an important thing to say. I did not, and I repeat, I did not know any of the Lancet parents. I was not handpicked to go on that study, and that's very important. And at that time, I was not involved in any litigation at that date. I started meeting other parents, even at, in the Royal Free, there was other parents with children there that was had bowel disease that were not part of the study. So the boys were investigated, and what was amazing is that the treatment that they started to have at that time from the Royal Free helped them. And Andrew Wakefield did not examine the children. He did not do any of the treatments there. It was done by Professor Walker Smith and Professor Simon Murch, who did the colonoscopy. And again, you're hearing out in the public that it was Andrew Wakefield did this, Andrew Wakefield did that. That was absolute rubbish. They take a history, and they took a full and thorough history from me, and I mentioned the MMR vaccine as part of this. And that's obviously, that it was very concerning to them. I didn't know at the time that other parents that were in the study were also mentioning the MMR vaccine or anything to do with that. And that's important for you to know as well. So as far as I was concerned, it was a completely blinded study. Now, Professor Simon Murch said he was very concerned. He said that when Brian Deer came to the Royal Free to investigate and look into this, he said he was it was profoundly disturbing, and he was angry about the unfairness and feelings of great concern that the lengthy documents with which he was looking at, and that he had to, he said that it was breaching the Data Protection Act. And I think that's very important. Even back then at the Royal Free, they were worried that it was breaching because it was a blinded study. And so that is how Brian Deer got hold of the names of all of the Lancet children.
Okay, I'm going to I have to now ask you some questions as we evolve the story. So let's keep this so people can follow it. Two of your children were not vaccinated with the MMR vaccine, and they were fine.
No, they weren't.
Two of them were vaccinated with the MMR and developed very bad gastrointestinal conditions, a massive diarrhea, bleeding, and autism spectrum disorder diagnosis. Dr. Wakefield did not solicit them, did not treat them, did not treat any of these children, but did speak with you, and you were in a blinded study. You were assured that it would be blinded, therefore the confidentiality of you and your children would not be broken, and I believe that's also part of, as it is in the United States, it is part of the confidentiality of a patient. If a patient is being treated and they choose to keep their participation in that treatment confidential, the doctor in the United States would lose their license, and anyone who had breached the patient's files would be considered to have not just done something unethical, but probably illegal, to have gotten that patient's records and made that information public. And are you saying that that is what Brian Deer, the person who is attacking Wakefield and this, these people, are you saying that's what he did?
Yes. When the children were at the hospital...
Well, he couldn't have done it on his own. Someone in the hospital would... Hold on. Someone in the hospital would have had to have helped him. He couldn't just... Nobody can just walk into a hospital, into a major study, and say, give me some files. I have confidential files.
No, even if he looked at the children's medical notes at the Royal Free Hospital, it wouldn't say that the boys were part of the Lancet study. This was completely blindness. So it was completely separate from being in the medical notes.
Then
because
how in the world, then how did
the
he,
treatment.
Then how would he have obtained information that no one else would have had at their disposal?
The Royal Free Hospital would have had to have done that. Even later on in litigation, when the medical files were handed over to the litigation team, when we were suing Merck and Smith, Kline, and Beecham, even then it would not be on the medical notes. So there's no other way that Brian Deer could have got hold of that information at all. The only one place he would have got it from was the Royal Free Hospital.
So are we hearing you correctly? I don't want to misstate anything. Are you stating that Brian Deer, with malice aforethought, had an accomplice or accomplices within that hospital turn over or provide documentation to him without the parents' knowledge or consent against British law that he then used to attack Wakefield?
Yes. And Richard Horton, editor of The Lancet, had sent me an email because I emailed him, and he said to me he was concerned that Brian Deer had confidential documents. And I have that email.
And what has been Brian Deer's position, at least if he has made a position, on having patients' confidential records without the permission, especially children, minors, without the parents' permission or the doctor's involved permission?
He refuses. I have emailed him. I've said, how have you got hold of my children's medical information? You have no right to publish it on your website because, again, it was the GMC will number the children, saying to protect the children, so they have them in numbers. Brian Deer, even before the GMC started, put the names of my boys and the others on his website in 2004.
Just so we're clear, your children's names were revealed, even though you had been promised that, as a part of the hospital policies and as the tradition and law of England, that a patient, physician confidentiality cannot be breached and unless the patient, with the permission of the physician, allows that he breached that. Now, this is a man who works for the Times of England. I'm going to take you slightly aside now, and we're coming back to your story. And again, this is a complicated story. To the best of your knowledge, is this the same Times of London that has recently been found guilty of repeatedly, illegally wiretapping phones, stealing information of confidentiality about multiple people, sensationalizing it in order to sell newspapers? Is this the same Rupert Murdoch organization or not?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And it's the same organization where they asked Brian Deer for a big story. It's exactly the same. And I have information, which it's under investigation at the moment, about phone hacking to to do with what's been happening to us, as well as bribery.
Okay. Now, is this, are you aware or not of the connections between Rupert Murdoch, his son, having direct economic interest in pharmaceutical companies making the vaccines in question, or having appointments to sit on the boards of these companies that make the vaccines in question, the MMR vaccine? Are you familiar with that association?
Yes, we are, definitely. And it's quite shocking, actually.
Well, tell the people who are not familiar with this, because you have to look at motive. If there's no motive, then you're stuck with a dead end of suppositions. But we're putting each piece of the puzzle together, something that CNN chose not to do. Anderson Cooper specifically, I'm challenging for the worst journalism I've ever experienced in my career, without even doing the basics. So I'm saying a criminal complicit organization, Murdoch's organization, engaged in reprehensibly unethical and immoral behavior repeatedly, and now being found guilty of it and having to acknowledge it. But then, more importantly, is his association with the specific companies that make the vaccines that you believe and others believe caused your children to have this autism. And if we can show the public that there is a board of directors that has a financial interest that also sits or is represented within the policy-making decision of the British Medical Journal or the British Medical Community or the Lancet or any of the publications involved, then you could argue that there is a conflict of interest here, and it was really protecting that financial interest. Because what would happen if it were shown, and this is a hypothetical position I'm asking you, what would happen if the British medical community had to acknowledge tomorrow that the vaccines they've been routinely using on millions of children in the British community were indeed defective and did cause a certain number of the children to experience not just autism spectrum disorder or bowel disorders, but other conditions that would be adverse to their health? What would be the financial consequences? What would be the reputation consequences? What would be the legal consequences of that kind of disclosure? Hypothetical question, but I'm asking you for your opinion.
It would be massive, especially as I know of 26 children who have died from the MMR, so I would call that murder myself.
So then they would have to be held accountable for murder.
It would be. I mean, the suffering of the children now, it is just... It's horrific. You know, if somebody committed murder tomorrow and they went to jail, they would be looked after so well. Our children are so ill that it's eating them from inside out. It's a horrendous illness. It's not a normal type of autism. It's the muscle pain that my son suffers from. He can't even walk up the road without his legs burning. The bowel pain, the slow heart rate that my other son has got. He can't even do sports. It is horrific. And I have, oh, my God, you know, Gary, the parents that phone me, the parents who are desperate with their children being so ill and they're being fobbed off. This is a lost generation of children who have been so badly damaged. And so many people out there know about it.
Okay, but is it your allegation, please state this, Isabella, is it your allegation that your children have been sickened, others have been sickened, and possibly many died from taking this vaccine, and the vaccine makers have then tried to cover their track by attacking those who would even suggest that there may be an association between that vaccine and some of the bowel conditions that they have suffered from? And rather than to open that up at all, they have hit Andrew Wakefield and the others with the articles and the attacks and taken away his license to disempower him from being able to prove that endocarditis, proven under a microscope, was associated with their condition. He associated the vaccines with endocarditis, and that is what they don't want to come out, because once you unravel that, you have no capacity to control it and then
who knows how many countless parents and their children would come forth and say, me too. Is that your allegation?
They have to take Andrew Wakefield down. They have to do it. If they don't take him down, then, you know, by taking Dr. Wakefield down, they're putting out a message to every doctor in the USA and the UK not to dare say that vaccines cause any type of harm. They have to do it in their eyes. If Andrew Wakefield wins, it'll open the floodgates. Doctors are scared. When I'd gone to my doctor's surgery, even now when I take my son into the doctor's surgery, if he's ill, they're scared, Gary. They look at these children like they've come from outer space because they know they're damaged. They know they're damaged. I've spoken to one of the top medical people in Merck when I was doing a program with him behind the scenes, and he said to me that the symptoms I was saying are on the product leaflet. He said, it's your government that decides on not to tell you that the symptoms are causing your child's condition. Smith, Kline and Beecham, they would not license the MMR in the beginning. They refused to do it. Merck would only do it if they were indemnified. That's the only reason they would do that, because they knew it was causing problems and they didn't want litigation.
True or not?
Another reason the government would be bankrupt.
True or not? Is this not the same vaccine that was shown to have been very problematic and had multiple adverse effects prior to it being renamed and manufactured by a different company? Is this not the same vaccine?
Well, it's not just that. That vaccine definitely was withdrawn, and the government knew it was causing serious problems, and they ignored it completely and gave it to the children. Uh-huh. And I'm told, but you'd need to research that then they gave it to third world countries after that. But the MMR2 came in on a license that wasn't a proper license, because the rubella part of the MMR2 wasn't part of that license. It was rushed in. And rushed in without thinking as well. And that's been causing serious problems. So, like I said, the first one was withdrawn, as you say, and they knew about those problems. The MMR2 came in, and they rushed that through, and that's causing serious problems as well.
But it's, in many respects, you're dealing with the same vaccine, just renamed and remanufactured.
Well, now, this is it, you know, and batches come and go all the time, and, you know, you don't know with contamination, you don't know what on earth is going on, because there's no safety net at all. I know that Merck has been had warning letters about the safety of their factories, etc., and the contamination. All of this is going on behind the scenes, and people don't realize what's happening. I didn't realize what was happening.
Well, I have the safety letters. That's a separate issue that will happen later. People will hear a full-hour debate between myself and the gentleman we're speaking about, Brian Deer, who brought the charges against Wakefield and wrote the articles in Rupert Murdoch's papers. Now,
well, Gary, Brian Deer is actually accusing parents of fraud as well.
Not how so?
Only, he's accusing everybody and anybody that's dealing with the MMR. He's saying that I knew that the date of the children was changed. Now, you know, it's just bizarre what's going on. And he knows he can get away with it. He knows he can say whatever he wants to say and it'll be fine. He does not care about the children. Absolutely not.
Okay.
He's just out to, I suppose, he's just out to be...
We don't know his motive, so do not give a motive for him. We do not know he doesn't care about the children. Give him the benefit of a doubt. If you were not here and he was attacking you by suggesting motive, I would stop him from doing that, as I'm going to ask you not to. You will hear in the debate coming up, myself with Brian Deer, I will get to all these issues. I promise you. Now... Separately and lastly, before we finish this part of our program and go and then bring in our guest, to also Dr. David Lewis, what can you tell us about the financial interest or the political association between Rupert Murdoch, his son, who now heads his news organization, and the British Medical Council, the magazines involved, and most importantly, the maker, the manufacturer of the vaccines that are in question?
Well, as you know, Rupert Murdoch, he was appointed on the board of the pharmaceutical manufacturers, and he actually received shares, payments, in 2010. He is obviously the Times newspaper, and that was the one that Brian Deer, within a fortnight of his appointment to News International, he published at least five articles attacking the MMR, and two of those articles were by Brian Deer. You know that the BMJ is also part of that. I mean, every single journal, they all seem to be connected to the drug companies.
Okay. Now, let's go forward and to finish up. So tell us what happened with Andrew Wakefield and the group of scientists who have all been condemned after they found that the children that they studied had intestinal problems, and they were concerned enough to write an article in the British medical journal The Lancet. Tell us the rest of that story before we go to our other guest.
When they had published the results, all hell broke loose, and I think they wanted to then look at other children. So Dr. Wakefield did more research. It was stopped by the Royal Free suddenly, and all the children, basically a lot of them, were thrown out of the Royal Free because of that. There was pressure on the Royal Free as well to stop any more research. Brian Deer had reported it to the GMC, and the GMC, as you know, Professor Walker Smith is now going to the Royal Courts of Justice in February to appeal what happened to him with this. And Dr. Wakefield has issued a writ against Brian Deer, against the BMJ, Fiona Godney. And Fiona Godney, the piece that she'd written, Brian Deer had written in the BMJ, I did put complaints into them because they would have had to look at the children's medical records again to do that piece. And she is standing by Brian Deer and completely ignoring anything that we're saying. So Brian Deer had also had one of my private emails that was emailed to me by Richard Horton that he published in the BMJ as well.
How did he get a copy of your private emails?
Well, this is what I'd like to know.
Well, hold on a second. Is that not a crime to have someone's...
Yes, it is.
Then why don't you go to Scotland Yard? Why don't you go to Scotland Yard and ask them to investigate this?
I will. I mean, I have put in a complaint to the police at Scotland Yard. I put in a complaint years ago to the local police station.
Oh, hold on. Is this the same Scotland Yard and the same police that Rupert Murdoch was paying money to?
It's Scotland Yard in London.
I see. Same one that Rupert Murdoch had undue influence over getting confidential information and paid money to. Is that the same Scotland Yard? Are we dealing with... Is there two Scotland Yards, an objective one that doesn't allow itself to be bought?
No, there's one Scotland Yard that I
know
of. And
the seedy little Scotland Yard that is up for sale to the highest bidder? Are we dealing with two Scotland Yards? I'm uncertain on this.
No, there's only one Scotland Yard in London.
I see. Okay. All right.
So it's the main.
Okay.
Yes.
But that's the one that's currently in a scandal of itself because of the influence that Rupert Murdoch and his minions had in collecting information for fee from them. So is that the same one you're going to go and say that someone has your emails, confidential emails, and that's against the law?
I've done that, yes. And I just got a letter back saying that they may look into it.
Okay.
And I'm waiting.
Well, why don't you take it to a newspaper?
Gary, the press won't touch it.
Okay.
They're not interested.
Hold your thoughts.
They're frightened.
Okay, hold your... media everywhere is either frightened or complicit in not allowing the full stories to come out. Let's go over and say hello. Thank you, Isabella Thompson. Thomas, please stay on the line. Now let's say hello to Dr. David Lewis. Dr. Lewis, again, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Dr. Lewis, as a person who has seen firsthand what happens when industry and government do not want the facts to come out that could embarrass them, for the policies they've had. I'd like for you to give us a little overview on what brought you to this story of Dr. Wakefield and his concern. And first, for our audience and for the record, you've been called by federal and state courts to appear as an expert witness regarding cases involving the collection and examination of colonic biopsy samples. In the case of Wakefield, we are fundamentally dealing with the question of enterocolitis found in autistic children. So we're speaking of a similar issue where your expertise has been acknowledged by the courts. So first, share with us a little bit about your own personal background and research in this area. And also, while at the National Whistleblower Center in Washington, D.C., you received from Wakefield's files pathologists' grading sheets and other data from the 1998 Lancet study. Now, were these records that were also available to Brian Deer, and are these the same that were reviewed by the court experts in Wakefield's trial?
Well, part of the answer is up in the air. They are records that the General Medical Council had in hand. Brian Deer has never released the results from those documents until recently, when I turned the documents over to the British Medical Journal. So whether or not Brian Deer had those records that are in Dr. Wakefield's files along or not, I don't know. I do know that these records contradict what Brian Deer has been saying. So hopefully we'll find out one day whether he had these documents all along and didn't divulge their contents, or whether he's just now learned about the documents.
Brian Deer wrote an article for the British Medical Journal entitled Wakefield's Autistic Enterocolitis Under a Microscope. What was Brian Deer's argument in that article, and how does the medical records refute or support his claims?
Well, in the 1998 Lancet article, there's a table, Table 1, that summarizes information on the Lancet children. And the bottom line, basically, is in that table, which was put together by Dr. Wakefield. It concludes that 11 of the 12 Lancet children had a form of colitis, inflammation of the colon, and one child was normal. So what Brian Deer alleged in the 2010 article you mentioned is that Dr. Wakefield took the records provided by two expert pathologists who looked at the biopsies from the children's colons, and Dr. Wakefield misinterpreted those records, and those records are called grading sheets. They're charts and summaries of information where the pathologist looked at the biopsies and graded them on levels of inflammation or degrees of colitis, of different levels of seriousness of colitis or the absence of it. So the allegation was that those records would show that, would actually show whether Wakefield was guilty or innocent, whether he correctly translated that information to the Lancet article, or if he just made up the diagnosis of colitis that was published in the Lancet article. So it is those grading sheets, that's one set of documents that I obtained to see, you know, myself, being a microbiologist, and as you mentioned, one that is called upon as an expert in interpreting biopsy samples from the colon, certain aspects about them with regard to infectious diseases, see for myself what they said. And it was that information I turned over to the British Medical Journal.
What was your interpretation? What were your conclusions? Do you feel that Wakefield falsified the endocolitis or the other conditions within those children's intestines, or did the original diagnosing experts in the field make proper diagnosis, of which Wakefield was simply writing what they had diagnosed?
I think it's absolutely clear that there was no fabrication or falsification of the information on Dr. Wakefield's part. It's not difficult to understand. Brian Deere, in his article, said that grading sheets are not used to make a diagnosis such as colitis. And so if you look at the actual grading sheets, though, one of the pathologists, Dr. Anthony, actually wrote handwritten notes on multiple forms involving the children where he wrote out the word colitis. And he also made various notes on chronic inflammation and acute inflammation. So clearly, one of the two pathologists did use the grading sheets to provide some information relating to colitis. The other pathologist, Dr. Dillon, had a different sort of a chart. And in his chart, he included boxes to check off to indicate various kinds of conditions, including colitis. He had a box for checking ulcerated colitis and a box for Crohn's disease. So clearly what Brian Deere wrote was wrong, and I could take those same grading sheets myself and see clearly where the table one that was published in the Lancet article could be derived logically from those grading sheets.
This is important that we understand this, Dr. Lewis, because if it can be shown, as you're stating, that Dr. Wakefield and the other scientists, of which there are many, not him, he was the one really targeted, did not misinterpret or did not make up any diagnosis, then the entire case against Wakefield and the other scientists is not to be accepted and should be challenged and should never have been, should never have gone any further. But now we've taken a step into a dark place, because once you have someone saying, here's the evidence, you're saying that these doctors made something up and there was no diagnosis of these conditions in these sheets, and then you look at the sheets and the sheets show that, yes, indeed, these independent experts said it was colitis, and Wakefield was merely stating that. Now you have to ask, well, why in the world would the British Medical Journal or the Lancet and all the other scientists involved, why would they be complicit in supporting exclusively Brian Deere and be completely attacking Wakefield and his colleagues? Why? What could possibly have been their way of understanding this? You're not dealing with one or two people. You're dealing with some very respected and esteemed people with great academic backgrounds who clearly could read the same information you could or Brian Deere could. Why is it you're on one side of the equation and the entire British Medical Society, most of its government, the Rupert Murdoch, his son, his Times of London and their henchmen, why are they all on the other side of this issue?
Well, I'm not so sure that they are on the other side. One of the British Medical Journal's own experts was quoted in a Nature article about the documents that I uncovered, and he himself said that he did not believe that they supported any fabrication of the data.
If they didn't support it, how can you take away a man's license and vilify him, trash him, destroy his reputation, beat him to a pulp in the media, including Anderson Cooper, of all people, at CNN? That doesn't surprise me. But how can this happen if there is no proof that there was any malice, there was any intent, and there wasn't even an error?
Well, it happens all of the time. I mean,
it does. Give us examples from your own personal experience.
Well, really, when it comes down to it, in the world of science, wherever a federal agency, a government agency of any kind, or a large corporation has a vested interest in the outcome of scientific research, two things happen. One, you see huge amounts of funding going to universities, to certain scientists. They're handpicked to publish scientific data that support government policies or certain industry practices. And those studies are funded by the whatever government agency has an interest in the outcome of this work. They want to make sure that scientific data that are published don't contradict or undermine some important government policy, or it's heavily funded by industry to make sure that research is published that supports whatever product they're selling. On the other side of the coin, which is equally important, is that scientists who come out and publish data that are not wanted by the government, not wanted by industry, and not even wanted by universities funded by government and industry, then those scientists are targeted to be discredited. And the weapon of choice in that battle is false allegations of research misconduct, because you can lodge those kinds of allegations, get them spread around, and by the time the scientist has proven his or her innocence years down the road, their research is over with, their careers are destroyed. They can never recover from it normally.
Are you suggesting then that the United States government, today and in its past, has intentionally targeted scientists who had the truth on their side and were not in alignment with a particular industry's position, its product or services, or a government program, or its philosophy, and hence were targeted for destruction using the major media, which were complicit in this process? Is that what you're stating? I want to be clear on this.
Absolutely. I mean, I know it from my own experience, where I published for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency articles in Nature and other leading science journals, got all kinds of awards. I had no problem. I got promoted. I got all kinds of awards within the agency until I published some papers where I uncovered illnesses and deaths linked to biosolids that you mentioned earlier, where sewage sludge is applied to farmland to grow crops and whatever. And I tied the toxic chemicals in the sludge, some of them, with infections, staphylococcal infections, that was resulting in illnesses and deaths. And at that point, the first thing that happened to me was out of Washington, D.C., they filed, through emails, allegations that I'd violated ethics rules for the government. They said that the disclaimer in my Nature article was a smaller font size than the rest of the article, and that violated a government policy on having a prominent disclaimer. Of course, I have no control over what font size Nature uses for disclaimers. But just to get the allegations going that you're unethical. And they also sent around an email that said that I'd violated a Hatch Act, which prevents employees from getting involved in political activities. Of course, it was ridiculous, but it just got the rumor going. I kept doing my research. EPA withdrew my funding from Washington, and I started paying for my research out of my own pocket. As I kept publishing papers, then a meeting occurred in Washington where office directors with EPA in Washington, D.C. had lunch with executives of a major biosolids company, and between the two of them, they put together a white paper alleging research misconduct against me, filed it with the University of Georgia, where I was doing the research, sent it to the EPA administrator. I ended up losing my job at EPA and the University of Georgia. And after that was over with, then EPA came out with the results of their own investigation and said there was no facts to support any of the allegations. And so I came out fine myself.
You won.
As far as having my credibility intact, I just don't have a job.
Okay, but you won. But I can name you 100 individuals in science who didn't win. Peter Duisberg, who had the decency and ethics to go up against some corrupt organizations within the AIDS establishment. And when I filmed him at the University of California, Berkeley, in an empty lab because no more research grants. And this is one of the, arguably one of the finest scientific minds in American history. And one of the people who were responsible for us doing the research on oncogenes and retroviruses. And he was the top dog until he questioned about HIV being the single and only cause of AIDS. He was suggesting other causes were responsible for AIDS, including the use of recreational drugs, and that was the end of his career. And when I went down the hall to speak with Dr. Bailey and others, professors on in his area, they all agreed, Peter's right. But you're going up against pharmaceutical companies, you're going up against ACT UP and other groups that all work together, and his reputation's done. So you were the fortunate one, Dr. David Lewis, to be exonerated. You have won your whistleblower's case. But for each person that dares to take on the government, dares to take on an agency or a newspaper or any of these, or has the resources to, they have to realize it's almost always an uphill battle, and more often than not, they don't win, and the media is almost never on their side. I just ask you that as a statement as any. Now, I want to report a few more things on your own background here for our audience. First off, quote, this is more on Dr. David Lewis's background. His environmental research at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Office of Research and Development, which was published in Nature magazine, that's the most respected scientific publication in the world, and other leading journals. He received the EPA's highest award for research science presented by the administrator, Carol Browner, and that research was not related to the Lancet article in question, but he also has had work that has been published in other major scientific journals, including The Lancet and the Journal of the American Medical Association, etc. So we're talking about a man with impeccable scientific academic background and who didn't realize at the time he was stepping on some toes when he said there are things in sludge, human sludge, when put out there and used as fertilizers that are bad. And for that, we now know from EPA documents that the sludge industry came in, used its political clout, and retaliated against him. Now we jump over here. Now back to Andrew Wakefield. In this case, explain what is a rapid response, which the British Medical Journal editor-in-chief, Fiona Godley, asked you to submit after your investigation of the pathological record showing that there were no frauds found on Andrew Wakefield's part for diagnosing colitis in his research. What the British Medical Journal actually made public from your rapid response was a version highly edited, cherry-picked by the journal. So review with us the fundamental differences between what the British Medical Journal published from you versus what you actually wrote.
Yes, actually what I submitted to the journal was a full commentary that addressed many documents that I found in Dr. Wakefield's files that had to do with the ethics charges, it had to do with the issue of how the patients were referred, it had to do with the allegations of falsification of the diagnoses, essentially, you know, even the patent issue. I addressed all of those issues and made, in my opinion, compelling arguments based on this new evidence that what Dr. Wakefield has been falsely accused, and in every step of the process and involving every allegation that Brian Deere has made against him. The British Medical Journal, the editor-in-chief, Dr. Godley, thanked me for my submission, rejected it, and invited me to submit a rapid response. A rapid response is something that's published electronically, and they select one to publish in the hard print issue as well. And I looked at what they would publish, and I saw that when you publish a rapid response, which is normally 300 to 500 words long, my commentary was 5,000 words long, that they let you attach other documents to go with it. So I decided I would just reformat my commentary with all of this information in it and have it an attachment to my rapid response. So that was accepted by the journal. They posted it on their website to show me that it was up, all assembled, ready to publish, with all of my attachments. And then as it came close to the publication date, they removed the attachments. They whittled down even the response that I had provided to them. They took it and rewrote it themselves. They narrowed it down to a rapid response only about the grading sheets. And that was just a small amount of the data that, and information and documents that I found that exonerate Dr. Wakefield, and published only that. And when I would try to put other things in, they would take it out. So the day came around when they published it last November, and then Dr. Godley was interviewed by a Nature reporter and others, and her response was, well, you know, we didn't allege fraud against Dr. Wakefield based on these grading sheets. And so Dr. Lewis's information has nothing to do with the fraud charges. It was just all one big show that BMJ put on to try to support their side of the story. I think what they were never able to get away from was the bind that these documents put them in. Clearly, unquestionably, the documents I provided to the BMJ show that they cannot blame Dr. Wakefield for the things they blamed him for, because the documents show that the other authors were involved in what was published in The Lancet. So it put the BMJ in a position where they basically had to come up with a universal conspiracy theory that everybody was involved in making up these diagnoses in order to sell vaccine products or whatever. And that's the route they chose. They could have just come out and said, we made a mistake. The grading sheets show that Dr. Wakefield didn't make up the diagnosis of colitis as we printed. We're sorry.
Okay,
but
now
no,
hold on.
They chose to blame the University College of London, the Royal Free Hospital, all 13 articles. It's never ending.
Okay, but Dr. Lewis, you're asking us now to accept that on the one hand, you yourself have experienced this challenge against your reputation from the EPA and the sponsors of a commercial operation on sludge when that article you wrote would adversely affect them, and the EPA to come out and apologize for the attacks against you or any other whistleblower, and you expect that there would be somehow a different set of standards on ethics when a person has done something wrong in England to apologize?
No.
Okay, now we're going to ratchet it up a bit here. I'm going to ask you to give us your thoughts, as I did with our previous guest, who is still standing by, and I'm going to return to in a moment, Isabella Thomas. Let's get more specific now. We're unraveling this piece by piece. You've stated, according to what I've read in the 167-page report that you wrote, quote, to support their new fraud theory, Godley, Deere, and the British Medical Journal lawyers engaged in the most reprehensible conduct I've ever witnessed involving any scientific journal, unquote. Is that true or not?
That is true.
Okay. Then you go on to say that with respect to your own submission to the British Medical Journal, in your opinion, quote, they use the same tactics of which they accused Dr. Wakefield and now the University College of London at large, unquote. True or not?
That is my opinion that that is absolutely true.
Okay, then I have to open this up. I would like you to now define the specific tactics as you understand them that were used to launch what you consider a witch hunt and trial on Dr. Wakefield.
What they accused Dr. Wakefield of doing with all of the information gathered on the 12 Lancet papers was picking and choosing different pieces of information to try to build a case against the MMR vaccine. That is absolutely untrue. On the other hand, when they took all of the information I gave them that shows that Dr. Wakefield was innocent of the charges that they filed against him, they picked the only set of documents that they could possibly use to support their side of the argument that Dr. Wakefield made up the diagnosis of colitis. The other data, for example, Dr. Anthony, the pathologist, had a slideshow, a PowerPoint presentation, where he meticulously goes through color slides of the biopsy samples and explains how he interpreted that information that was published in The Lancet and his professional opinion about the significance of inflammation and the diagnosis of colitis. It's all explained there. It's so clear that it was not Dr. Wakefield, as Brian Deere claimed, that was driving what the diagnosis was, but the pathologists themselves were interpreting what they viewed in the biopsy samples. And so it just goes on from there that if you look at Anthony's notes and he's written colitis there, you look at affidavits that Dr. Anthony and the other pathologist, Dr. Dillon, submitted to the General Medical Council, where they said they reviewed the results and conclusions that Dr. Wakefield provided before the paper was published. They approved those results. There is layer and layer of different independent sets of information that point to Dr. Wakefield's innocence in this.
All right.
BMJ cherry-picked it, provided a select small amount of information, and used that to support their case.
Okay, then add this in. Speak on the suppression of evidence undertaken by the British Medical Journal and the courts and Brian Deere.
Well, you're talking about the information that I submitted?
Yes, or the information that was available that had they chosen to bring up all the parents, which they did not, and look at all the original materials, which they did not, would have clearly showed that the challenge against Wakefield and the others was not supported by the evidence at hand.
Yes, that is suppression of research data, and it's It is considered a form of research misconduct. It's a black and white issue. If a scientist has data that he or she publishes to support a certain conclusion, but at the same time has in hand other data that contradict that conclusion, it is undeniably, unquestionably, research misconduct, fraud, to publish only the data that support the conclusion. And in my opinion, that's exactly what the British Medical Journal did with what I submitted to them. There's no difference.
Okay, but if someone intentionally subordinates information that was germane to a case, hides information, it's in the United States, for example, as an example, if you are challenged in a court of law and it's later found out that the prosecution withheld exculpatory information that would have exonerated you, that is official misconduct, and that would exonerate you. Are you suggesting that there was exculpatory information that would have exonerated Andrew Wakefield in not only the court system but in the British Medical Journal, and they would have had to apologize, but they chose not to? And if you're saying that, then you have to give us what you might consider, by speculation, a motive to do so, because by inference you're suggesting that a group of individuals and a group of publications and institutions conspired together, which represents a conspiracy, several people working together, to manufacture or to manipulate the outcome of information. Your thoughts?
Yes. What I'm seeing in Andrew Wakefield's case is something I've lived through myself, where the federal government had something at stake in what my research was saying. And the federal government got behind it to try to discredit me. And in Wakefield's case, when I began going through the documents, putting everything together, I read the transcripts of the General Medical Council's hearings. I saw red flag after red flag that the entire process from the beginning, including what went on with the General Medical Council, was being driven by the government in order to protect, that is, by the British government, in order to protect the British government's interest. The first red flag to me was reading Dr. Richard Horton's testimony in the General Medical Council hearings about what happened when Brian Deer came bringing his allegations against Dr. Wakefield and the other authors. He was accompanied by a member of the British Parliament. Now, I don't know whether that strikes the average person as being odd, but even Dr. Horton testified that he was shocked to see walking through the door not just Brian Deer, but a member of Parliament.
Not just any member of Parliament.
Yes, Mr. Harris, who actually was at his own objective of going after Dr. Wakefield.
And you're familiar with his support of the vaccine program in England, are you not?
I am, and the research, I came across that.
And the paying the money, you're familiar with that whole trail, I'm assuming, correct?
Yes.
So it's not as if he just walked in with just a insignificant member of Parliament. You're talking about one of the most influential members of Parliament, highly, highly tied to the vaccine and pharmaceutical industry, with a lot of issues involving research funding, etc.
Yes, and he and other members of Parliament actually passed a motion during the GMC hearings on Dr. Wakefield's case and his two co-authors passed a motion in Parliament blaming Dr. Wakefield for killing children. I mean, that just shows you the role behind all of this that the British government is playing.
But the British government does not play any role unless there's motivation. There's a long history of crimes and misdemeanors and true treason by members of Parliament, by prime ministers. I've laid out a history of these on a previous program. I laid out a history of why the Great Irish Famine was not really, did not have to be devastating at all, but I laid out the role of the British government and the different people in power. I've laid out how they kept evidence of the knowing in advance that the people who were arrested and kept for life in prison for the bombings of pubs in England, they knew at the time had nothing to do with it, and later these people, long later, these people were let out of prison. I have 100 instances where the British government has engaged in illegal activities no one ever, not once, held accountable for it. That's the way their country works. That's the way our country works. So then who's behind this? What is the ultimate motive? Who are they protecting? No one would be risking their reputations. No one would be going to this level unless there was some big inducement. From your research up to this point, what is this really all about?
Well, I think everybody who's kept up with this story in any depth is familiar with the fact that the British government approved the vaccine, as Isabella talked about earlier, that actually, in a little more technical detail, it was contaminated with the Urabi strain of the mumps virus, which was known in Canada to cause outbreaks of encephalitis. And yet it was approved by British government officials, introduced in Great Britain. The same thing happened. There were numerous outbreaks of encephalitis. They're well documented in the scientific literature by many different research groups, and the vaccine was withdrawn. It is, I believe, if you want to trace it down to where the action starts, and this is just my opinion of where this would lead, if you could follow the trail, it would do the same as in my case in the United States on the biosolids issues. I spent 5 years in discovering about a dozen lawsuits to find out who was behind it. I wanted their names, and I wanted to know how they did what they did. In my case, all of the attacks aimed at discrediting me from what I described earlier to actually providing the University of Georgia with fake data to publish to try to counteract my research. It all tracked down to a handful of people in EPA that have worked at EPA for over 30 years. They developed the agency's biosolids policies. And when we interviewed or deposed one of the officials involved in development of that policy, he was asked under oath, "Why are you trying to destroy David Lewis?" And he answered it very honestly and plainly. He said, "Because my reputation rests on the biosolids policy. I developed it. Any attack on it is attack on me personally." That's what it boils down to. You know, it's not some diffuse government or agency. These agencies, these government organizations are run by people who have something at stake personally. Whoever put their signature, in my opinion, on the documents in Great Britain that signed off on the approval of that vaccine, MMR vaccine contaminated with the Urabi strain of the mumps virus, that person and persons surrounding that person have a lot at stake. And it goes on from there.
It could be hundreds. It could be hundreds. Could be hundreds of billions of dollars if it were shown that they knew in advance they were using an old vaccine that had been contaminated, had been withdrawn, rebrought out on the market under a different name. The liability would be astronomical. The reputations for each and every person who continued to be a part of this this attack would be devastating. You're talking about dozens of people. Now, my final few thoughts before we go on to the next part of our program, which will be, for those of you listening, I'm Gary Nall. I'll be having a debate with Brian Deere. I can assure you that I will give him every opportunity to offer up his opinions and each one, and I will treat him with the dignity and respect that I do at all the different people on this program. I want to keep it civil so that we can focus upon the issues. Now, you raise a suspicion that Brian Deere may not have actually written one or more of the articles published by the British Medical Journal to discredit Wakefield and his research. Please explain why.
Well, it may be hard for an average person to recognize, but I can read, as a microbiologist, I can read an article written about microbiology, like the Lancet article, or clinical studies, and I know what it takes, the level of understanding it takes to write a technically correct article on something like an exposition of the 1998 Lancet article. Brian Deere has no formal training in medicine or science. I mean, Dr. Gottlieb and two of her co-editors described him in an editorial in the BMJ as being a man standing outside of science and medicine. There is no way, in my opinion, that someone with no understanding, no really good training in microbiology and clinical medicine could write the articles that he published. Now, that's not to say that he didn't start out by providing some documents, some of his own writing, but what sort of reinforced my suspicions in that area was how that Dr. Gottlieb and others took what I submitted as a rapid response and started from square one and rewrote it. And they handed to me what they were going to publish as my article. So I'm simply asking the question, did they do that with Brian Deere?
It's a hypothesis. We will leave it at that. What are your thoughts about the British Medical Journal's leading editor-in-chief, Dr. Fiona Godley, and her role in this?
Well, Dr. Godley said in testifying before Parliament last year, she said, and I'm paraphrasing it, but it's close, very close to it, she said, it's been said that the peer-reviewed journals are the marketing arm of the pharmaceutical industry. And she said, that is not untrue. In her editorial about the documents that I turned over to the BMJ, finally, at the end of that editorial, she states that the British Medical Journal is funded by the two main major manufacturers of the MMR vaccine.
You've raised a red flag. So let us backtrack a moment. The woman who is responsible for blocking the full information from coming forward, selectively cherry-picking it, according to you, and for allowing the total destruction of Andrew Wakefield and the other scientists involved in that original study, the magazine receives a substantial amount of its funding from the very companies that would be disgraced and exposed if the full truth of the dangers of this were to be presented. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct.
Okay, finally, you've called for a formal investigation into the activities of this woman, Dr. Gottlieb, and the British Medical Journal and Brian Deere regarding the unwarranted defamation of Wakefield. I'd like for you to talk about where that stands, and also one last issue involving Brian Deere. You raise an issue that Brian Deere, when challenged, is very aggressive in defending himself and attacking the people who have attacked him. So I would like for you to give us an understanding of exactly what that means in your case or in other cases, and I will ask the same of our other panelists standing by. And also, one characteristic we've heard repeatedly, I have, by people who have had a run-in with Brian Deere, is that he does not take criticism easily. You encountered this with Deere. Tell us what happened.
Yes. Early on in my investigations of the documents in Dr. Wakefield's files, I came across a document that even Dr. Wakefield himself did not fully realize the implications of it. What I found was an expert report that was filed by a professor by the name of Ian Booth. And what Professor Booth did in an expert report as the expert for the General Medical Council, he was, Dr. Booth was the General Medical Council's own expert pediatric gastroenterologist. What I was dumbfounded when I saw this document, in 2006, Dr. Booth did the very analysis that Brian Deere was to publish later in 2010, where Professor Booth took the routine pathology reports from the Royal Free Hospital and compared those with the Table 1 published in the Lancet article and said they don't match. So two things hit me. One is, how does this happen? How does Brian Deere publish something in 2010, become famous for it, and yet the same thing was done 4 years earlier by the GMC's own expert? Number two, how did the GMC's expert decide to basically compare the wrong records? The Table 1 in Lancet article is based on the grading sheets by two experts, Dr. Dillon and Dr. Anthony. So if you want to see if Table 1 is accurate, you compare the records that were used to make that table. Instead, the GMC's expert took the routine pathology reports, which might have been done by a pathologist who was a dermatologist, somebody who didn't even know about, you know, what a colon biopsy should really look like. Who knows? What, it wasn't done by experts. So it raised a huge question to me there. So I sent an email, actually at the suggestion of a Nature reporter, said, why don't you contact Dr. Booth and verify that this record is real? And so I did, and Dr. Booth wrote back, and I asked in my email, how did this come about? And Dr. Booth said to me that the GMC's lawyers asked him to do that analysis. Now, I don't know if you see this picture that's developing here, but the British government's lawyers are asking an expert to produce an analysis that is flawed to use against Dr. Wakefield and his co-authors. But the mystery is, the government never introduces Dr. Booth's expert report. I believe the logical explanation is they didn't want to see it torn apart by Wakefield's lawyers and the other author's lawyers. Instead, somehow miraculously, this faulty analysis shows up in the BMJ published by an investigative reporter, Brian Deere.
For the Sunday
explain that to me.
For the Sunday Times of London, Rupert Murdoch's organization that has been found to have serially, illegally, unethically, immorally wiretapped, used information of a private nature, and have paid Scotland Yard police, and is now having to be held accountable only at this moment when it did this for years. Dr. David Lewis, you have given us some substantial insights. It is unfortunate that the American media has chosen not to do the homework that you have. Instead, they have simply accepted the British Medical Journal, the British Medical Society, and Brian Deere's allegations without response except to parrot them. We appreciate the time, the effort that you have taken. Please stay tuned and listen to the debate I will have in a moment with Brian Deere. Now over again to the United Kingdom and England, Isabella Thomas. Isabella, you've been listening to the discussion of Dr. David Lewis and myself. I am going to offer you an opportunity for your final comments before we go to the debate with Brian Deere.
Well, my final comments are that I'm puzzled how the GMC never inquired how the children are now, how the bowel disease has progressed, how, you know, some of them have had the same procedures in other hospitals where the disease has got worse. So how can they say that Dr. Wakefield and Professor Walker-Smith shouldn't have done the tests on these children when a lot of the children are still having the tests done today because of the bowel disease? The disease has progressed in the boys. And this is something, if it doesn't exist, then how has it progressed? How have the biopsies turned out positive? Where are these lesions and abscesses coming from? Are they just imaginary? Other gastroenterologists have confirmed what Professor Walker-Smith, what Andrew Wakefield, and what Simon Murch have feared, that the disease is progressive and it is causing these children a lot of problems. Professor Booth, who was on behalf of the GMC, I was puzzled why he never actually interviewed the parents, why he never actually talked about the children. I think he didn't have all the medical notes there, so I didn't understand how he could make a decision on what he did have at the time. He's a gastroenterologist, so why didn't he interview us? So that was a puzzle as well. We also sent a statement, most of the Lancet parents, to the GMC to give to the panel about our concerns at the way the GMC was progressing. They refused to give the statement to the panel. And when I was at the GMC at some of the hearings, one of the panel was actually asleep while the hearing was going on. So that says a lot of the setup that's been happening. I will be interested in what Brian Deere has to say. Maybe you could ask him how he knew my boys' names when it was a blinded study right at the beginning and where he got that information from.
Do you? Did Brian Deere ever interview you?
Did he ever answer me?
Yeah.
No. The only way I spoke to my Member of Parliament, and he answered my Member of Parliament attacking me personally. And that's all he ever does now. He will, on blogs, mention, he doesn't mention my name, but he comes up with some medical information that he takes bits out and says a parent here and a parent there. And I know that medical information he's got never showed up at the GMC. He would have only had that by reading the children's medical notes. He tends to tease like that quite a bit, you know, on the blogs, which is not very nice to see. But, you know, I mean, he's never interviewed me, And that puzzles me as well. I mean, right back in 2004, if he had phoned or knocked on my door and said, I'm concerned about what's happening, I would have been quite happy to talk to him. But he never did that. So that puzzles me as well. And it puzzles me why he attacks us parents, not just me, but others, like John Stone, who does Age of Autism UK. He's done some amazing research, and that's out there as well for the listeners to look at, and others. And again, all he does is keep attacking us personally. And I just wish he'd actually interviewed me right at the beginning. You know, we don't have anything to hide here. And I would have been quite happy to speak to him.
I'm sure that you're familiar with the current predicament of the Rupert Murdoch media empire and all the allegations against it, including those that the son and Mr. Murdoch and some of his top aides were not open and honest with a commission that was investigating them, and many have been arrested and others.
You're talking about the Leveson inquiry?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and I mean, I've submitted a lot of stuff to the Leveson inquiry, and so have others. To date, they're not, they don't seem to be doing anything. I don't know if they will. There's also an organization called Hacked Off, who is meant to support ordinary citizens in the UK, and they were supporting, they were supporting that Leveson as well, and we certainly sent a lot of information to them. Until actually, I found out that one of the advisors on Hacked Off is Evan Harris. And so Evan Harris, as you know, is the MP who went to the meetings with Brian Deer, who was outside the GMC, etc. as well. And so we asked about this because, you know, we were very worried that he was. And then Evan Harris actually tried to disassociate himself from Brian Deer. But he can't do that because, he's been there. Now, I also wanted to know if Evan Harris has been looking at the Lancet Children's medical information. And if he has, why did he do that without permission? And does he have copies? Because he asked Brian Deer for copies, of documentation. Has he still got those? So there's a lot of questions there that need to be answered. And the BMJ, when I spoke to them about that, when I spoke to Fiona Godley about that, she said it's confidential information that for journalists, Brian Day doesn't have to reveal it. Well, he does. We're talking about children here. You know, you cannot do that. If anybody is worried about a study, it should be done properly. It should not be done through a journalist. It's just ridiculous. It's not the way to do anything like that.
But keep in mind
and
now,
that's what's been happening. You know, Brian Deer has been leading this.
Isabella, now Brian Deer and the British Medical Journal and Dr. Fiona Godley will all be involved in testimony under oath. So many of the questions that Dr. Wakefield and his attorneys and yourself or others have, I'm sure, will be raised, and then you'll have a chance to see what the other side in this issue has as far as explanations that they don't have to give when they're not under oath and not compelled to be held to that oath accountability. So that will be coming up in the not too far future. This is going to play itself out just like the questions that have to be asked, and then you'll start to get into the associations between the pharmaceutical companies, the scientists for the pharmaceutical companies, the monies they've given, who's on their board, the fact that they had a terribly dangerous vaccine that should have been banned forever, and yet it was not. So,
well, our children won't go away, Gary. You know, they're here. They have been damaged. And, you know, eventually, as you say, the truth will out.
It will in time. And when it does, whatever that truth is, if the truth comes out that the British Medical Journal and the British Medical Society, the complete society, and members of Parliament and the medical board and others, including the Times of London, if they all engaged in a witch hunt, a modern-day medical McCarthyism, then they should all be held legally accountable, and at the very least, they will be exposed for doing this, and then all of their accomplices who parroted this information, the American media, should then be called out and embarrassed for not having done even the most basic research, which would have given them at the very least a sense of pause, as it did Dr. David Lewis and others who have looked at this. Now, I've intentionally not invited certain individuals on today's program who have extremely important information, because I intend to see what the next move by individuals are before I do my next program and present even more information that is germane to this case. This is not the beginning or end of it. This is merely one stage of this looking for the truth, whatever that truth may be. It is my opinion, based upon my research, that Dr. Andrew Wakefield and his colleagues were unfairly challenged and attacked, their reputations destroyed, and I would not have known that had I not done my own years of research and publishing articles fully referenced, none of which have been refuted. And I send all my articles to all the leading, like the Journal of the American Medical Association, the head of the FDA, the head of the U.S. Public Health Service, the head of the Journal of Pediatrics, and I ask them, find me the error in my scholarship. And they won't even respond. And we have over a dozen articles. Fortunately, we have the internet, and we guesstimate that over 20 million people worldwide have read these articles and giving them a different perspective. They still, at the end of the day, have their freedom of choice to decide what they want to believe, but at least now there is another perspective. I want to thank you very much, Dr. David Lewis, for joining us, and also Isabella Thomas, thank you for your input. We're going to take a brief break here and come back, and then we will have a debate between Brian Deere and myself on the issues, followed by an in-depth analysis with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, scientist, and others that will be forthcoming. And that you're going to be hearing. This is all told. We're going to go almost another 5 hours. We have a lot to say, and hopefully you will be patient enough to listen with us. Back in a moment.